Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
Sorry that I'm practicing good mic technique by trying to get my body. It's all about getting the waves of your chords. Let me tell you about your chords that you got in your throat.
I was more reacting to the wingspan you have right now on those knees.
Yeah, listen, it's not man spreading if you're by yourself in one chair. Then it's just expressing yourself.
Just spreading.
Then it's just spreading. Then it's just a comfort-based sort of...
Which as humans, you know, we have a right to do
we
in our own
We have a right
chair.
To spread in our own homes, in our own houses. Mm-hmm. And the government? Who? I mean, the government. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, no, that was enough.
Sometimes the government... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, stop now. That's enough.
Don't get me started on the government.
I know, right?
When the government... Ooh, man. I get so that I can't even finish about the government.
You know what? That's not what this show is about.
It's not, but it's hard. You get me started on government. It is hard for me to focus on the good stuff happening in there.
The show is about wonderful things.
The show is about wonderful things. So government?
No, not government.
Take a hike, govnt.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I shorten the word government because I don't respect the word. Hey, do you have any small wonders?
I do have a small wonder. And that small wonder I am formulating right now as I am talking.
Oh, here it comes.
So maybe you should go first.
My small wonder is I have had the same, literally the first thing that I saw with my eyes when I was pressed to discuss it. I have had the same bottle of glasses cleaning solution for easily 2 years now, right? I got it from an optometrist visit, I want to say in 2018, early spring 2018. Using it and cleaning my glasses, I feel like I have supervision. It's like a whole new set of glasses because we have a child who likes to play with the glasses. They get smudgy, dirty. I can't see very well, but I'm not very good at like realizing that. And then I'll be like, hey, I'm going to treat myself by cleaning my glasses with the fluid. And then it's like I can see through walls. Like I can see super, super good. I've had the same bottle of this cleaning fluid I use to give myself a real touch up for 2 years. It's that bottle right there. Look at it. What percentage empty do you think it is?
That's like 2%.
It's like forever. It's like forever, this bottle.
Yeah.
It's so dope.
It's your forever bottle.
I love cleaning my glasses. Mm-hmm. I love what it's like to look through clean glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Surely that was enough time for you.
I am going to give credit to the 4-pound bag of Easter candy.
Oh, yeah.
That we received from my mother.
Yeah.
Approximately 2 weeks after Easter.
Yes.
Which was exactly when we needed it.
Right. It landed perfectly in the... In the
I
sweet
believe
spot.
It was intended to be for our son, but he does not know about that bag.
No, we
that
did steal basically.
That's a mommy and daddy bag.
That's a mommy daddy bag of Easter candy. Listen, he's a little tyke. We don't want him to have 4 pounds. If I were to space it out, I would want our son to eat 4 pounds of candy over the span of 11 years.
Yeah, exactly.
But me, I'm a big adult man.
Yeah.
My metabolism can handle 4 pounds of candy. Although it's really down to about 3/4 of 1 pound of candy at this point. Yeah, it's been good. Been getting us through the hard times. I believe you go first this week.
My first topic.
Yes.
Is the lava lamp.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
The lava lamp.
You ever make one of them by yourself?
Make one?
Well, I mean, make a like, you know, low budge water and oil lava lamp.
No.
Really? Oh, man.
Was this a science project?
It was a science project. I feel like I made one at church. I feel like why did I make a lava lamp at church?
Yeah, was there like a STEM education component of your church?
Absolutely not. Oh, no, there wasn't. No, there was not.
Was it like a camp? Was it like a...
Maybe. It was like a vacation Bible school project situation. But you could do like food coloring in the water and then you put the oil in and it would like blobs of it would float around.
Was there a light component?
No. Again, a very low budge. I guess
not
it
really
was just
a lava lamp
no,
at all.
No, just a lava bottle. I am excited to hear about the history of the lava lamp.
Yeah. So I would say mid-90s. Particularly while I was in middle school, became very interested in owning a lava lamp.
Yes.
Because I had seen them at the Spencer's Gifts.
I was just about to ask if it was a Spencer's Gifts situation. Uh-huh. It is weird to me. I know our listenership across all of our shows skews pretty young. I don't know if Spencer's Gifts, it's not still a thing, is it? Spencer's Gifts?
Who knows?
Who knows?
I mean, I haven't seen one.
I mean, malls aren't a thing necessarily as much as they were.
Yeah, we have a mall that we have frequented, and I do not recall ever seeing a Spencer's in it.
So it's wild to me that, like, there's a lot of stuff that I only knew about because of Spencer's Gifts.
Yeah. I mean, Hot Topic still exists.
Yeah, I guess Hot Topic supplanted it. Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
It was a novelty shop. They sold rude greeting cards. They sold, if you wanted some sort of Austin Powers memorabilia, they would have it at Spencer's mm-hmm. Gifts. They would have, like, if you wanted, like, a walkie-talkie fart machine, you would get that at Spencer's Gifts. If you wanted a plasma ball, they're going to have that right at Spencer's Gifts. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure Plasma Ball was the, like, fucking foundation of
That's
their...
That's what the store started with. Yeah. Just one Plasma Ball.
Just one Plasma Ball, yeah.
In the, like, mid to late 90s, there was a real resurgence of, like, I don't know, like, 60s and 70s nostalgia.
Yeah.
Not just because of Austin Powers, although it didn't hurt. A lot of the fashion of the grunge era was like very thrifty.
Interesting.
You know, there was this idea of, like, you know, getting that polyester shirt from your local Value Village. And I feel like that kind of jumpstarted this idea of, like, I want my whole life to be groovy.
I would say that went all the way up to early aughts. You think about that, Britney, that Paris Hilton, there was for sure a, like, bell bottom hippie jean resurgence. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know where you were going with that.
No, I'm saying, like, this aesthetic, I think, carried over into, well into the aughts.
Yeah. So here's what's interesting about the history of the lava lamp. There are a bunch of surprises.
Oh boy.
Okay, so it was created in 1963 by a British accountant named Edward Craven Walker.
Okay, cool last name.
And originally it wasn't marketed as this, like, psychedelic thing. It was actually advertised in the American Bar Association Journal.
What? For lawyers?
Touted as an executive model, and it could be mounted on a walnut base alongside a ballpoint pen in the ad.
Okay.
Yeah. But then, of course, like, the big psychedelic movement happened, and it was like, oh, this would be good for that. So this guy, this Edward Walker gentleman, who, as I mentioned, British accountant, also had a history of creating naturism films, which was, nude films.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not pornographic. Why did I say that word like that? Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did. I mean, sometimes you say words funny, so I didn't think
anything
of it.
That wasn't one of them.
That wasn't intentional.
Pornographic. Pornographic.
He went under the pseudonym Michael Keatering and directed several films in the late 50s and early 60s.
These are just nude people films?
Yeah. So one, for example, Traveling Light came out in 1959, and it was filmed off the coast of Corsica, and it was just an underwater ballet of nude people.
Hmm. All right. Cool.
Anyway, he got the idea for the lava lamp. He was at a pub and noticed a homemade egg timer created from a cocktail shaker filled with different liquids bubbling on a stovetop.
Interesting.
And he thought, that's pretty
cool. I'm
going
to steal that.
Mm-hmm. So he used a light bulb as the heat source and used a bottle which previously contained a beverage called orange squash, which was a drink in England that was apparently pretty gross.
Yeah,
but came in that,
bad.
If you think about a lava lamp, like, it is basically in, like, a glass bottle. It is both water and then wax. And included in the wax is something called carbon tetrachloride, which adds the weight to the wax.
Okay.
So that it moves, when it heats up, it moves kind of more, I don't know what the word is.
Weirdly.
Yeah, weirdly.
I recognize the name of that chemical, and I think it might be from all the fucking slime videos.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. So the heat source at the bottom liquefies the waxy blob. As it expands, its density decreases and rises to the top, where it cools, congeals, and begins to sink back down.
Mm.
So it gets far away from the heat source, and then, you know, the process continues over and over again. This became popular partially because it had cameos in the hit shows Doctor Who and The Avengers.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think... I think this was like part of the TARDIS aesthetic for a season, right? Okay. Can't you see? I may just be pulling that out of my ass, but I could see like one of the, because each Doctor has a new like sort of TARDIS design. I could see that being the aesthetic for one of them.
Yeah. Originally it was called an astro lamp.
Okay. I like that.
So the phenomenon, as I mentioned, kind of cooled in the 70s.
And sank back down to the bottom of the
where
trends.
Where it heated up again.
Right.
They were only manufacturing about 1,000 lights per year.
Oh, my God.
But then in the Austin Powers era, as I mentioned, the public again warmed to the lamps.
And then it started to float again.
And in 2000, Mathmos, which was the name of the company now, sold 800,000.
Oh, man.
And you can find them now at like Target and Walmart. Like it's a part of the culture and it doesn't seem to entirely disappear. Granted, it's not as popular. Like in the 90s, everybody had a lava lamp. Yeah. Everybody I knew had one.
Yeah, we had one. And it broke at one point, and that wasn't good. It wasn't on when it broke, which is cool because it probably would have started like an electrical fire in our house, but it for sure broke and we lost.
I took it very seriously because I remember the package said not to leave it on for longer than like 2 hours. So I felt very strongly about that. But then I would go over to people's houses and they just had them on 24 hours a day.
Those things got fucking hot.
Very, very hot. Yes.
It was like the corn baller from Arrested Development. Like you would go over to a friend's house and like accidentally brush up against it and suffer a serious, serious burn. Boy, howdy. My first topic really dovetails, I think, pretty nicely with your first topic, because my first topic is laser tag. So we're kind of like hitting a very specific sort of time window. For me, laser tag had sort of like two implications to my youth. And the first was like the more exciting one. It was like the, like in the pantheon of vacation activities at like tourist trappy places, it was like the shit. It was like the thing I looked forward to. It was that and mini golf. Whenever we'd go on vacation to Myrtle Beach or, somewhere in Florida where my nanny was living, or the big one was Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
Now, did your parents play with you guys, or was this
brothers? Yeah. No, I think they would probably play with us. I remember playing at Qzar. Did you ever fuck with Qzar?
I don't know what that is, Griffin.
Qzar. Well, it's a pretty major like chain of laser tag places. Yes, Qzar is probably arguably the biggest chain of laser tag places. Quick history lesson. It was developed in 1987 in Perth, Australia, and it was called Quasar, but because of trademark concerns when it came to the US, they had to change it to Qzar. But it was in like the UK and it was in
Ireland. So this isn't just like a regional thing.
No, this was like a huge, huge thing. And Qzar kicked ass, man. It was like laser tag, which there were laser tag places that existed all over. There was I think in Dallas, what was it? Photon was the name of a place. I think in Dallas, it was like the first major like laser tag establishment, opened in 1984 from this dude named George Carter III, who saw Star Wars and was like, let's just do that. But Qzar was like this idea refined because you had teams and everybody had the vests and the blasters, and the blasters had like ammo.
My experience with laser tag is it is always a room within a much larger arcade.
Yes. Well, no, Qzar was like its own
Just laser tag.
Yeah, and it was huge. It was like this multi-story battlefield installation where there were like bases and outposts that you had to capture by going inside and like shooting specific discs. And if you got blasted, you had to go and recharge your ammo back at your home base.
Yeah,
there were different game modes. It was like
this
so
is not
much
an
stuff.
Experience I had.
It was
ever.
It was so sick. It was like the thing that I would like look if we went to the beach and I knew that Qzar was also in the future there. Fuck the beach.
How do I get indoors again?
How do I get back to Qzar? So the history of laser tag is fairly interesting. It was it sort of developed out of a combat training sort of program for the army called the MILES system. It's an acronym, but I didn't look up what it stands for. So let's just say major in intelligent laser execution
system. Yeah, of
cool.
Course.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. And so the technology kind of came out of that. It's not particularly sophisticated. It's just infrared technology that you might have in a remote control, as evidenced by the fact that if you had laser tag toys at home, you could just use a remote control as a blaster. That was something that I would do from time to time if I wanted to get tricky, like, oh, I don't have a gun. But wait, I do. Channel 5. So the home toys, Photon, the establishment I mentioned earlier, the first sort of major laser tag establishment, released their own line of home toys in 1986. And nearly at the same time, a company called Worlds of Wonder released their trademarked lasers with a Z, laser tag set. They would both shut down. Both companies would shut down within the span of the next couple of years. But the laser tag brand would bounce around all kinds of different companies. I think right now, I want to say, Nerf has it right now. And they're still making stuff from time to time. But in the late 90s, there was this swell of laser tag toys where you could get the dopest shit. Like, we had a set of pistols with the vest that you could wear. You could get the bazooka launch in a different pattern. You could set I feel like there were mine traps. There was this whole set of toys, and we would play constantly.
You have to play at nighttime, right?
No.
Because it seems like my experience with laser tag is that there's some kind of, pointer, red dot sight thing that helps you aim.
No.
And you can't really see that in the daylight.
It didn't really have that. Again, it was essentially a pistol-shaped television remote control that would just send out an IR blast, almost like a... not a light gun. I think a light gun, like the Nintendo Zapper, was a different
thing. So accuracy wasn't particularly important?
Not the strong suit of this thing, no.
Okay.
There was also a target practice set. There was all kinds of stuff. We would mostly play indoors, so your concerns about the sun interfering were not a concern.
When I think of children's toys, I usually think of a child being outdoors, and then I remember that was not exactly what you did, per se.
Yeah, no, not especially. This was, I think we got a set for Christmas, and for the next 2 years, we just played all the time. Our friends would get other toys in the set and just bring them over, and we could have laser tag wars in the, I was about to say backyard, but that would be a falsehood. obviously have not played in a long time, but here in Austin, there is an establishment called Blazer Tag.
Oh my gosh.
That was so fucking fun. I think I've only been to it once or twice, and whenever I've gone, maybe it was just once. And we played, and it was the most fun. It's in the Qzar family of just there's objectives and a bunch of different
multiple levels. We all came out the sweatiest we'd ever.
I came out thinking my heart was about to fucking explode in my chest. It was one of those things where I was having so much fun that I did not realize I was essentially full-blown sprinting through this place for a half hour. And then we got outside and I could not breathe. But it's still so fun. I like laser tag a lot. I like the idea of laser tag. The idea of laser games.
It has always thrown me a little bit because the accuracy kind of eludes me. I have never really been particularly good because you'll aim at something in those little arenas.
Right.
That's 100 feet away. And it's am I hitting it?
you're more into the paintball scene, the airsoft scene.
No, see, I hate that too.
Yeah.
I have nothing against laser tag. I have no idea whether I'm good at it or not. My instinct says no, that I am not.
I believe the opposite. I think you're good at everything you try to do.
Well, thank you, sweetheart.
You're welcome.
Hey, can I steal you away?
Yes, except making the air horn noise. That's that's the one skill that eludes
you. Oh, you mean boop, 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 boop.
Yeah, that's that exactly. Boop, 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 boop. Hey, I got a Gumba Tram here, and this one is for Amanda, and it's from D, who says, "To my beloved Amanda, you are the greatest and the center of my world. You make every day wonderful. From your awesome attitude to your gorgeous smile, you are brave and courageous. Thank you for marrying me and making our wonderful babies. I love you so much, D." Wanted this one close to Mother's Day, coming in pretty close, I think. Coming in pretty close to that one. It's this Sunday, folks. Get a card. Get some Get some chocolates. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. As you say this, I just assume that I am getting all of those things.
You got other things, not chocolates, because we do, again, have a four-pound bag. It would be irresponsible to bring more chocolat into this house. Can you read the second message?
The second message is for future, parentheses, now present, Allison, from past Allison. Hey there, beautiful. Here's hoping you're making good choices and living your truth. Remember that shining bright helps others see, so pass that confidence around like a blunt. Oh. And let that vibe waft like thick cotton. Mm. Breathe deep. We've got this.
I like that. I don't think I've ever heard an inspirational message be so sort of married to sort of weed language. But it excites me.
I like let that vibe waft.
Let the vibe waft. Everybody's checking the vibes. Everybody's doing vibe checks these days. Don't check the vibe. Just let it waft thick cotton.
Hi, I'm Jackie Cation.
Hi, I'm Lori Kilmartin.
And we have a podcast called The Jackie and Lori Show. Who are you, Lori Kilmartin?
Oh my God, so much pressure. I'm a stand-up. I've been doing stand-up since 1987. I'm a writer for Conan. I've written a couple books, have a couple CDs out, have a special out. Who are you, Jackie?
Well, I too am a stand-up comic since 1984. And I do the road like a maniac and don't have a cool writing job, but I have four albums out, working on a new album. We talk about stand-up. We talk about all the different parts of stand-up comedy. So that's the Jackie and Lori Show, and you should subscribe on Maximum Fun if you want to hear that.
And I would encourage you not to.
I need to hear your second thing. I need it.
My second thing is very specific.
Okay.
It is using Google Earth to visit places you used to live.
Okay. That is the most specific.
I imagine a lot of people haven't lived as many places as we have. But
real world travelers. Okay. Well, there was that one season we spent in Prague. You remember the wildflowers?
What did we do in Prague?
Oh, we marched in the Great Rebellion.
And had the traditional food in Prague, which is...
Spätzle.
Okay.
Cake. Spätzle cake.
Yeah. Ooh.
I'm sorry, I said it wrong. Special cake.
There you go.
In Prague, they make a special cake. What's in it? You're going to have to go to Prague to see.
Like we have.
Like we did.
Like we have gone to Prague.
And lived there for a season.
Lovers.
Which season did we spend in Prague as lovers?
Let's say it at the same time.
One, two, three.
Spring.
Falsing.
I've lived in a total of three states. Most of the places I lived for like a year in like an apartment complex or something.
Right.
But a lot of the places I've lived have developed significantly since I've lived there. And so it is interesting to enter an address, which I remember because I lived there,
mm-hmm.
and see how it looks.
Ooh, that's a fun game.
Right?
That's a fun game, is trying to remember my addresses.
You don't remember your address?
I remember my address from when I lived in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
I think I remember all our addresses here in Austin. I do not remember my Cincinnati address.
I should say that one of my Chicago addresses, I remember the street. I don't remember the exact number.
I can't remember, gun to my head, any other place I lived in Huntington except for my house that I grew up in. And I lived in like five different apartments in Huntington. I cannot remember a single one of them.
Especially in Chicago, I have found this feature exciting.
Yeah, I've done this before also.
With Google Earth, like it's satellite images, and a lot of times it's like
street
images. Yeah, street view. And so you, especially in Chicago where you walk around a lot, you can like walk through your old neighborhood and be like, oh, hey, that Walgreens is still there.
Yeah.
But, oh, that Chipotle is not.
Oh, no. What happened?
It's shocking to me. There is an apartment complex I lived in when I was in Columbia, Missouri in college that looks exactly the same. And keep in mind, this is 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, oh, that must have the same owner and they must definitely not have painted it ever.
The place I lived in, Roscoe Village, has not change, because we actually visited there, I think, last year when we did a show in Chicago.
Oh, yeah?
It was some recent tour we did. We stopped in Chicago and I caught a train and like walked through my old neighborhood because it was really nice outside and I wanted to see like what was different. And it was just exactly the same. Roscoe Village, man. It's a, you know, it's a, we move, we go, things go a little slower down here.
Yeah. See, meanwhile, my apartment in Chicago, when I was in graduate school, has changed dramatically. They've done a lot of development, a lot of condos. And so it was like difficult for me to find my bearings because what used to be like a, you know, a shopping plaza is now a huge like 10 story condo situation.
I don't it always seem to go. You don't know what you go. I've had that song stuck in my head. We were trying to figure out what it, like impressions we could do, and Rachel said I do a pretty good Joni Mitchell, which I don't, but I have had that song stuck in my head, specifically actually the Vanessa Carlton version of it that she does with the Counting Crows leads Adam Duritz.
I don't think I know. Well, maybe I do know this.
It was the version that most people know. It was the version I knew before I knew that Joni Mitchell did it, and there's a verse where Adam Duritz comes in so fucking hard and he's like, farmer, farmer, put away your DDTs. Leave me words in my apples. Leave me the words and the bees. He like fucking hits it so hard. Farmer, farmer, put away your DDTs.
I don't remember how we started talking about that. Oh, because I was talking about condos.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went on a whole journey there.
Anyway, can I quickly tell you about Google Earth?
Sure.
In 2005 is when it was launched. Google purchased Keyhole Inc., which became Niantic, the Google subsidiary responsible for Pokemon Go.
Yeah. Niantic made another game that was like the precursor to Pokemon Go, whose name escapes me at the moment. I didn't know that they did Google Earth as well, though. That's wild.
Yeah. So they use satellite and aerial imagery, which is a partnership with NASA and National Geographic and others. Google Earth digitally stitches together billions of images taken by satellite and aerial photography. I guess when you open Google Earth, what you're looking at is a springtime in every area of the planet.
Whoa!
They call it, quote, pretty Earth. So they just used a composite all around the world of every area in springtime.
That's wild. I did not know that. Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
Make it look extra lush, I guess.
But even in like, but there's certain places, like you think of like, I don't know, like Nagano, like places where like the winter is like the pretty area,
true,
the pretty times. Snowshoe in West Virginia, I think probably looks better with snow on it.
Well, it, when you zoom in, right?
Like, yeah, I guess
that's the thing. Like, obviously, even at Street View, like you zoom in and it may be like Christmas time, depending on when they did that image capture. Google Earth has also been used for a lot of productive purposes. This is something I didn't know about. There was someone named Saru Brierley, who was an orphan from India who was raised in Australia. This person was able to reconnect with their birth family after being separated for 25 years by following geographic markers on Google Earth.
Hmm.
These experiences were detailed in a book called A Long Way Home, which was turned into a movie called Lion in 2016. It sounds fascinating,
yeah,
though, right? Like, if you think about it, if you can approximately remember where you grew up, then you can kind of identify a lot of landmarks and kind of relocate yourself where you were.
Yeah.
There's also been positive results for tracking climate change through this product. They've been able to, in Indonesia, a conservation group was able to view illegally fished and overfished areas of the coast. They've also been able to identify uncharted, untouched rainforest in Mozambique. You've been able to do a lot of modeling because you can track it over time. You can see like the impacts over years. This is something I didn't know about. Google apparently partnered with Sesame Street and Carmen Sandiego to develop interactive games. Each region of the world has its own unique Sesame Street characters, and you can do guided tours of different regions led by the associated character.
I'll say the most important contribution that Google Earth has given the planet is how John Boyes uses it in all of his videos for SB Nation, like the Pretty Good series in 17,776. If you have not read that or watched that, he like makes videos.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, I've shown you John Boyes' stuff before. He did Breaking Madden, which is like the series where he fucks up seasons of Madden, the video game. But he also like uses it in all of his videos as like a visual aid for all kinds of different cool things. It's inspiring. As somebody who likes to or used to like to make videos without learning really high touch technique, seeing Google Earth be used to really enhance a video is exciting to me.
Yeah, so I think this is really nice. I really enjoy it. It's fun to kind of see when the photo was taken and be like, oh, hey, that's my car.
Yeah.
But they do, you know, protect your privacy to a certain degree, so it's not like you're able to read license plates. So yeah. nobody steal my car.
Please don't steal Rachel's car. I can't believe we have to keep asking. Can I tell you about my second thing?
Yes.
Free restaurant bread. When the bread at the restaurant's free.
Whoa.
When you're at the restaurant and you get free bread, especially when you don't expect it, right? Especially when you're at like a place like a non-chain restaurant, mm-hmm. and you're just sitting there and you've ordered your fancy entree and you're excited about that. And then just like bread shows up and you're like, fuck yeah.
Oh, isn't it funny when you don't know that they give you free bread and you ask for bread and then the waiter is like, oh, bread's coming. Don't you worry.
You fucking idiot. Yeah, you can pay for the bread. Stupid. I love bread. Bread is good. I think it ranks up there with some of the best foods on the planet, and restaurants are just giving this stuff away. When people complain, they're like, oh, you're going to fill up on bread. And I'm like, yeah,
yes.
Good.
Yes, I am.
I am. That's Thank the you. Idea. And then I get leftovers. This is a win-win scenario for me, is I will fill up. I have had several times where I've filled up so much on bread and maybe a couple appies off a platter that then the entree shows up. I'm like, just box it. I ain't touching it. That's a tomorrow meal. You talk about like a Texas Roadhouse where they roll up and they got them big rolls with the honey butter. Let's talk about Olive Garden, where they roll up and you do have infinite breadsticks.
Yeah.
Infinite breadsticks that you can use for dippings in your sauce.
Olive Garden is built around the philosophy that they are going to give you too much food.
Let's talk about Nasty Olive Garden, which is what I call Fazoli's, where they roll up with their like little spicy bastards that you can have infinite of, and they just walk around and give it to you at the restaurant.
Yeah.
That's good. Let's talk about Red Lobster. Let's talk about those Cheddar Bay biscuits. You've never been to Red Lobster before, have you? Mm-hmm. We've talked about this.
No, I've
this
had...
This is unthinkable to me.
I've had a biscuit from there because you can easily recreate them, as I understand it.
Yeah, I mean, you can come close. You can come within striking distance, maybe. But there's nothing like the genuine article.
Hey, what is Cheddar Bay?
Cheddar Bay is where these biscuits hail from. It's off the Amalfi Coast. We gotta go to Red Lobster. I gotta get you to Red Lobster during like fucking Lobster Fest or Shrimp Fest. One time I watched my brothers compete in a shrimp eating contest during Shrimp Fest at a Red Lobster. And it's the worst thing I've ever, It's the worst thing I ever saw. They kept track by the tails that they left, sort of. Yeah, man. It was grisly.
Did you not participate?
Fuck no, I didn't participate.
Good for you, Griffin.
Did I participate? Uh-oh. I don't think I participated. Texas, here in Texas, like most barbecue restaurants, like they will give you fresh baked bread. That is a big thing at County Line, which is a chain here in Austin. Yeah, County Line is a place here in Austin.
They give you like a whole loaf of bread.
They will give you a whole loaf of freshly baked white bread that is so good. And they have little cups of butter that you can spread on it. And it's just so dope. And it goes with barbecue so swimmingly. Anytime you get a wet food, like a barbecue or a pasta, and then you get the bread for dippums.
Oh! You came in like Adam Duritz on that wet food line.
Farmer, give me the dippums, please. So I was curious why it's a common thing, and it's not like especially surprising. Bread is kind of a edible symbol for hospitality, hence like breaking bread. So its origins are sort of based in that, but also like not a surprise at like taverns back in the olden days, things like meat or certain types of produce or cheese or whatever were the more difficult kinds of food to come across as opposed to bread, which was fairly easy. You just get some grain and millet and whatever. So bread was cheaper and more plentiful. So there really was this concept of we're going to fill people the hell up on bread so that we can serve them less of the good stuff.
So we can bring them one apple.
And you may have had the thought of like, boy, how can they afford to just give away the free bread? I mean, philosophically, the price is then elevated on every other object. It's tied into the price of other things.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. I've never, maybe I shouldn't, you know that restaurant I've been planning on opening?
Uh-huh.
Maybe I shouldn't.
Off the coast of Cheddar Bay?
Off the coast of Cheddar Bay in the Manchego coast. Manchego Peninsula.
I wonder if you didn't ask for bread, if you said, I'm not going to be eating bread, could you discount 3 cents from
each the price of all of my things? Yeah, so like it became so commonplace that it became sort of unnatural for people to ask customers to pay for bread. And so like that is why it is sort of a thing at restaurants. But man, I ain't complaining. God, I love free restaurant bread. Fucking Spaghetti Factory. When they bring you that the focaccia bread with like, and then you have a little bowl with olive oil and cracked pepper inside of it. Fuck, man, that's good.
Yeah.
What's your favorite bread? I feel like this is a one-sided conversation. I know you love free restaurant bread.
I know. I've been trying to think about free restaurant bread. Sometimes they bring you like a basket and it has different types of bread in it.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Except sometimes it has like those crispy cracker like breadstick thing. Get those the fuck out of there. That's mm-hmm. not really. That's mm-hmm. that's a different thing. Bring me a cracker basket and then you can put that in there. Give me some Chex Mix. Anyway, do you want to hear what our friends at home are talking about?
Yes, please.
A lot of people wrote in about free restaurant bread. Just like every week people write in 100 times about free restaurant bread. And I have to just sort of, I have a filter for it now in our inbox, which is what? WonderfulPod@gmail.com. Hit us up if you want to submit. Or is it WonderfulPodcast@gmail.com? Ooh, no one's quite sure, are they? Yeah, it is WonderfulPodcast@gmail.com. So if you have submissions, send it there. Just a sentence, please. Just one sentence. Please. Like this one sentence that we got from, okay, actually this may be multiple sentences. Michelle says, something I think is wonderful is chip clips. My husband and I recently bought a pack of rainbow magnetic ones and we've been using them liberally, cereal bags, frozen veggies, and occasionally even chips. They're so satisfying to use, and when at rest, they decorate the side of our fridge with a cheerful pop of color.
Oh, that is nice.
We need to get us some chip clips.
We do. What I use is I use rubber bands off of other packages, and the rubber band isn't always a great sealer because it'll scrunch up your chips.
It's not ideal.
Be careful with that.
Kevin says, my small wonder is that extra little bonus sip you get when you're filling up a to-go cup at the soda station. It's when you have to sip down the overflow, but then get it to fill back up before tapping it and leaving the restaurant. The world's least consequential but most thrilling crime. Oof.
I do like that. I think that's allowed.
I don't think anyone's going to prosecute
you on that one.
Yeah. Man, I'm just... The first place that I remember there being like a self-serve soda station, and that's a mouthful, in Huntington was the Fazoli's that we would go to after church sometimes. And we would do the like disgusting mixture of different soda flavors.
Oh my gosh. You really painted a picture of the McElroy family in this episode.
I have, haven't I? Hey, thanks to Bowen and Augustus for the use for our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. And thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network.
Yeah, thank you, Maximum Fun. A lot of comedy and culture shows. They just recently announced that Bubble is being optioned for film usage, which
That's
is exciting. So if
exciting.
You haven't listened to Bubble, I would recommend you check that out. It's a good show.
There's another new show on the network, Triple Click. It's a gaming podcast that's got some good folks in it. Kirk Hamilton, Maddie Myers, Jason Schreier, former Kotaku folk. I'm very, very excited that it's a part of the network. They're all good beans. That's a thing that people say sometimes.
Yeah, sure.
And let's just sort of like send them off with just like, how's your fiber intake?
Oh, yeah.
And let's talk about this.
Yeah, please.
It's so hip and so trendy to be like, your breathing's not right. Are you drinking enough water? let's have a moment of contemplation for your mind. And it's like, that's all good. And you do got to do that stuff. But how's your fiber doing?
Do you want to tell them your fiber tip?
I eat fiber gummies, but then we ran out and I don't necessarily feel like exposing myself to the outside world for fiber gummies. So I was looking in our coffee cabinet and what's there in the back? A big orange tub of Metamucil. You know I'm going to dip into that. Hello.
Some people get their fiber, you know, from like a leafy vegetable.
Not me.
Griffin says, no, thank you.
I see a tub of muse in the coffee cabinet. I say, hello, gorgeous.
How can it be orange flavored? That's what I want.
Yeah.
Without having to eat an orange.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.